Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. Today, I'm joined by Mercedes Smith, the principal flutist for the Utah Symphony and the founder of Black Strad, a line of concert attire designed for the modern musician. So welcome to How Fitting, Mercedes.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this conversation. When people think about fashion and performing arts, dance and maybe theater costuming come to mind first, but music is also a performing art. So I'd love to know, like, what role does fashion play in a musician's performance?
Well, you know, ideally, fashion should just not distract from the performance. And that's why most musicians are wearing what we call concert black, which is just all black concert attire. It's usually kind of required to be formal. And the idea is that, you know, as an ensemble, they want us to be looking rather uniform, but still being looking formal. So that's kind of how concert black dress came about. And there's lots and lots of variations to that. We can go into talking about white tie and tails and tuxedos and the difference between what women and men generally have to wear. But it's a great topic because I think musicians should be talking about this a lot more.
Yeah. And I think when we were emailing back and forth, I know I shared, though not professionally, like I grew up playing the cello and finding like skirts that I could, you know, wear as I was playing cello was always a huge issue. And so, you know, I imagine for some instruments, it's maybe more of an issue than others, but I bet kind of across the board, even vocalists, like there are like your clothes impact your performance ability and, you know, like physically and, you know, how you feel in them while you're performing.
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, as you know, the cello is one of the most obvious examples because you have to put the cello between your knees. So the skirt can't be tight. It has to be an A-line kind of flowy skirt. But there's lots of other things that a lot of people wouldn't think about. You brought up singers, of course, and I myself as a flutist, I'm a wind player, so I'm also breathing. And you know, certainly there's so many beautiful formal dresses that are maybe have kind of like a corset style and they're very tight around the chest and it's just restrictive to breathing. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, I really can't wear that on stage. And I think there's also for, you know, people like violinists or string players too. You know, I think there's just a range of motion that they need with their arms in order to move the bow across the strings, right? So it can't be too restrictive in the shoulders either. So that's some of the ease of movement and fit issues that musicians have. But really one of the biggest issues is how hot it can get on stage sometimes. The stage lights are often very hot. I perform on a very hot stage. And, you know, when you add a little bit of stress, you get a little bit nervous, then you get even
and black.
Hotter. Yes. And you're wearing black under the lights and you're feeling stress. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of sweating on stage. And I think a lot of people have just accepted that as a way of life. And I feel like we should do better. And I feel like we can do better. And that's part of what I'm setting out to do.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And it's like so niche too, but it's very needed, you know, like the general population who maybe has gone to a concert has never thought about this, but probably every musician has. And it's so cool. I think that we can, you know, create clothing and create fashion that really serves a purpose to do better, like you said, in this specific scenario of music performance.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I'm a professional musician. I play over 100 concerts a year, and there aren't very many people like me, but there are a lot of part-time musicians or amateur musicians. And even when you go to thinking about students, thinking about high school choirs, there's a very large percentage of high school students that sing in a choir. And some of them do an all black dress code, but a lot of them do kind of like identical dresses for the girls that are required for everyone to look exactly the same, and the boys wear tuxedos or something like that. So actually, there are a lot of people that are in need of concert attire beyond just professional musicians like myself.
Yeah, very true. So you mentioned like black, and kind of the physical kind of movement needs of clothing, but what are some of the other dress code rules for concert attire that maybe those listening are not familiar with?
Oh gosh, we always talk about this as such a can of worms to open up when we talk about the dress code, because no one's ever happy about the dress code, and we can argue about it to no end about what we think we should be doing and what looks best. But I suppose when you think of your traditional professional symphony orchestra, which is what I play in, the men are wearing often white tie and tails, very Downton Abbey style. And the women are afforded a lot more leeway. I mean, there's generally something in the dress code that says skirts should be, but somewhere between ankle length and floor length. Like a mid-calf length is not going to be considered formal enough. Things like you have to have pantyhose on or knee highs. You can't have bare exposed skin on your legs. Closed-toe shoes, things like that. So, when you're talking about your skirts for the, I made a cello skirt. I literally called it a
I
cello
saw
skirt.
that, yeah.
Anyone who's a musician gets it. And any cellist who's shopping will be like, oh, that's a great cello skirt. I can go to wear that to rehearsal. But if you're thinking about a skirt, well, you can't really have a slit in it either. Some orchestras allow a little bit of a slit, maybe if it's in the back of the skirt, but so many black evening gowns are really not conservative all around one's figure. I mean, there's generally either a very high slit, or there's a plunging neckline, or there's a plunging back line, or there's some kind of cutout. Often I think, sometimes you can even find a long sleeve black evening gown, but it's still, there's something sexy about it that's just probably a little too sexy to slip it past the dress code. So I think, maybe for the men it's easy, I'm putting that in air quotes, it's easy to find a white tie and tails or to wear a tuxedo with a black tie. They're going to be very uncomfortable and hot in that probably, but it's at least easy to find that. And I think there's a perception for women like, oh, the dress code, you guys can wear anything you want as long as it's all black. Well, I challenge you to go find a floor length evening dress that's long sleeve, doesn't have a slit, doesn't have a cutout, doesn't have a plunging neckline or back line that you can also move and breathe in. Really hard.
Yeah, I totally believe that.
And that also looks dressy. You can find a lot of styles that are just sort of made out of like a jersey t-shirt material that might meet all of those requirements, but it's not actually formal looking. So it's not that easy to get dressed. And then you have the whole issue of being hot, which I'm trying to tackle by using some specific fabrics that I think will be much more breathable and lightweight and comfortable to wear on stage.
Yeah, and I definitely want to ask more about that later. But I think another thing too that is a not Well, a challenge to find clothes that are comfortable is that, like, you're seated as a musician too, most of the time. The majority of the orchestra is seated. And, having a tight, like, a corset dress or something like that, it makes it so much worse and so much tighter when you're sitting. So, especially for like formal gowns where, they're not made to look good and function while sitting. They're made to look good, like, standing there, not moving.
That's such a good point. And you know, all of us, myself included, I go to a store and I try on a dress in the dressing room and I generally forget to sit down in it. And if you know as we do, when you sit down, you kind of get at least an inch bigger around the waist. And so a lot of things that seemed comfortable in the dressing room, once you sit down in it, you realize, wow, that's really pretty tight. And then when you go to play under stress and on stage and the lights, then you realize you're deeply regretting having purchased certain attire. But yeah, like for my job, I'm always sitting on stage. You know, sometimes for other things that I do, like chamber music or solo performances, I will be standing. And that's generally when I don't have to adhere to as strict of a dress code, because if it's a small chamber group, we often kind of wear colors or decide we're all going to wear bluish tones or something. Or often the if we do choose to wear all black, we won't be so strict about it with hose and, you know, super long sleeves and stuff like that. So yeah.
So many rules. And so I was like reading on your site and like thinking about this more earlier, and like some people might say that like black clothing, because all of your pieces are black, are still like very traditional and safe. And you mentioned like not the deep slits or high slits, but compared to the more historic orchestral dress codes that you're talking about, like your designs are actually perhaps maybe a little controversial. Like they aren't the like super formal, original kind of dress code of an orchestra. So I'm curious, how does black strad, like what is your thoughts on the dress code for musicians in kind of today's modern world, and what would you like it to look like in the future?
Oh, that's such a great question. You know, I think my orchestra recently switched over to an all-black non-gendered dress code, which was very controversial in itself. But now that everyone's getting used to it after we've been doing it for a year and a half, I think people do like it better in general. I think particularly wearing cummerbunds and ties and tailcoats for the men was maybe one might say oppressive. So I think, you know, and there's also kind of a barrier between the musicians and the audience. I know a lot of audiences do want to see us really dressed up in formal attire, and they like seeing the tails. But there are also a lot of audience members that find that pretty intimidating. They find it kind of elitist, maybe. And you know, if our orchestras or performing organizations are really trying to reach newer, younger audiences, I do think that a black dress code that's more minimalist and what I would call more modern, can be a little bit more approachable for those audiences, and also a lot more wearable for the musicians who have to perform in that attire. So I guess, you know, I think because if we take women, for example, we've been afforded so much leeway that, you know, and it's very hard to say, is something formal or not, right? Like really, what makes something formal? And I've been struggling myself to define this and write blog posts about it. But a lot of it does come down to the fabric, right? Because they can write in the dress code, well, you have to cover your elbow and it has to be to the ankle and you can't have this much skin showing, la la. But it really is like fabrics, like a t-shirt fabric is not very dressy. I think most people could agree on that. And then you kind of get into athletic fabrics. And a lot of people, because they've been sweating so much on stage, and also because athleisure has gotten really kind of high end. I always talk about Athleta. I think it's the Brooklyn jogger, or it used to be called that. It has a little tuxedo stripe on the side of the leg. I totally own those pants, and I have absolutely worn them on stage. And I don't judge anyone who does. I do think that that's sort of the result. Like we're seeing that that's kind of a symptom of there really isn't formal wear for women that's really comfortable in. And if they're allowed to wear athleisure on stage and they can get away with wearing those Athleta joggers that kind of look like a tuxedo pant, but they're absolutely made out of a stretchy athletic material. They're going to wear that because they're more comfortable in that and they're going to get away with it. But I do wish we could get to somewhere more in the middle, somewhere between the Downton Abbey vibes and the athleisure vibes, to have something that's more modern, but still dressy and somewhat formal, to really give the performance the gravitas that it deserves. Because I think, we have a lot of respect for classical music. I'm a classical musician, and I think there's a lot of history and tradition there that I want to respect and carry forward. I think there's also a little bit of baggage there that maybe we can afford to get past too. So, it's been difficult to design clothes that kind of meet all the requirements that still feel kind of modern and minimalist is really my aesthetic that I'm trying to go to. Because basically, going back to the beginning, Concert Black, the whole point of it is so that we look unified, right? But we don't look identical, hopefully. So, maybe wearing a lot of sequins, it might be allowed, but you might also be kind of looked down upon that you're trying to bring too much attention to yourself as an individual and not fitting into a group. And I love sequins, so I totally wear them, and I usually don't get in trouble, but I'm always waiting for the day when they're like, you really can't wear that Mercedes. But just a way to have like a little bit of individuality, but it's not super standout. So I think that kind of simple lines, modern minimalist look is honestly what a lot of musicians are trying to find.
Yeah, I mean, so this conversation I feel like brings up so many different elements of fashion and music and, tradition, but also you mentioned, almost like this classism or elitism, and tradition versus modernity, and like there's so much going on here that I think it's just a really fascinating to think about of how clothes can be designed in a more, inclusive and more comfortable and still, in a way that honors the traditions and the formality and gives the respect to this art. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, I agree.
So, what made you start this brand? Like, obviously there's a need for it, but starting a fashion brand is, not something that every musician does. So how did that endeavor start?
Well, I mean, a lot of it came about from my own orchestra's when we rewrote the dress code, which took many years to do, really. And in just in thinking about that, I guess one of the things I hadn't realized was how much inequity there was between the men and the women. And my husband's a violinist, actually. He plays in the Utah Symphony with me, and
Oh,
he is
cool.
no fan of the white tie and tails. But I guess it had never occurred to me that there were some men who were maybe slightly resentful that they had to wear the white tie and tails, but maybe sitting right next to them was a woman who got to wear the Athleta joggers, but they were never allowed to wear that. And it just felt like something needs to be fixed here. There's a real problem here that there's this disparity between the genders, or that we have a gendered dress code at all. So we now have it non-gendered, and there's still a lot of guidelines. I mean, it's all an evolution to getting to something much more progressive someday. So I guess I just kind of observed that that there really was some kind of problem that needed fixing. I didn't know how to fix it. A lot of ideas came to mind, like trying to be, I don't know, a stylist or something, which seems like a very silly idea now. I mean, my husband was like, you should just create a one-stop shopping place for all things Concert Black. And I'm like, yeah, but how would you do it? And that is essentially what I want to do. And again, I am, I have my own brand, which is called Black Strad. But Black Strad, the website, also sells other brands as well. And so that's kind of a curated collection that I've found that meets all the standards. But there are some things are very difficult to find. I cannot wholesale them and put them on the site. For example, like we were talking about long skirts, it's very hard to find an ankle length or floor length black skirt. Like just that, just simple. Or the dress, a black dress, for example. And then the next problem is that, because I kind of did some market research and asking what people are wanting and feeling like they need or can't find. And some of it was about, I feel like all my black is mismatched. I mean, just because it's black, it goes together,
I
right?
was gonna ask about that because, like, anytime you do separates with like black, white, or gray, they are never the same black, white, or gray.
It's so hard. So I did kind of set out to make a capsule collection because there aren't that many kind of black tops that actually match black pants. That's not what most people are wearing out in the world. So that's not something you're going to find at Macy's, really. I mean, I guess you can find a black suit and but there aren't
You
often
won't be able to move in that though.
yeah, not like a top and a bottom that is, I mean, you may not want it to be made out of the entirely the same fabric, right? Which is why I kind of designed most of the collection in two different fabrics. That way, there was kind of a more matte fabric, and then there was a satin fabric. And then a lot of the garments have the satin kind of as the trim. On some of the bottoms, there's like satin trim, and then most of the top will be all satin, and they'll go together. And the idea is that you can mix and match them. Because there are two different blacks in each garment, and then it's easy to mix and match. So I think finding matching sets like that was hard. Finding dresses and skirts in particular was also difficult. And then if you really want to try and find breathable material, well, then you're totally just out of luck. So I wish it had been so easy as to just, go on fair.com and wholesale a bunch of concert black and put it all in one place for people, but they would still have the problem of a lot of garments are basically missing from would be missing from the inventory. So then I decided I needed to create at least some clothing of my own, which was, as you know, very difficult, especially for someone like myself who has no background in fashion or design or sewing or anything. So, it's been a huge learning experience for me. It's been really fun. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be to actually develop my own kind of first collection of six garments. But we did it, and there, half of the inventory, almost half of it is here, and the other half is currently being sewed right now and should be here in the next couple of weeks. So
So
it's an
exciting.
exciting process.
So the fashion industry, I feel like classical music is also very traditional in many ways. And in developing Black Strad and, working on the first collection, did you run into any kind of like fashion codes, let's say, that surprised you?
I'm not really, but I'm sure I did. Like, where are you going with this?
Like what, you said it was, a lot harder than you had expected it to be. So like, what were there any things that you were like, oh, I never thought about how that would be so difficult, or that's the way this works in the industry, that it surprised you during this process?
Okay, I have an easy answer. It was everything surprised me at how difficult it was. Just from fabric, as you know, fabric is very it's somewhat difficult to source. It's very difficult. It was much more difficult than I thought it would be to find kind of eco-friendly fabrics that were breathable and formal looking, because in general, something like satin or chiffon is it's
Polyester.
polyester, so I was able to source a partially recycled polyester, which was difficult enough to find. And because I don't really know anything about fabric, a lot of the mistakes during the prototyping and sampling process were entirely mine, because I thought a certain fabric would work great, and it did not. And a lot of the pattern makers sometimes warned me, I don't think this is going to go well. And I was like, well, can we just try it? And they did. They were good sports about it. And I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. That did not work. But there were some things that I chose that surprised them that did work out better. So yeah, I mean, fabric is one. I mean, I'm working on another dress right now, and I'm still debating about changing the fabric yet again, you know. And I think there's also that process, that perfectionist thing, which goes along with being a musician, is like, when are you done practicing? You know, because you're always trying to get better, you're always trying to improve. And you know, with what I do, the you're done practicing when it's concert time. There's no more time left. Right, you practice all the way up to the last minute, and then you hope you're ready. But yeah, with this kind of design process, where you know I'm just doing this on my own, I don't really have any deadlines. There is that kind of feeling. Well, should we do another sample, or should we say, you know what, this is you know a minimum viable product that is good enough to start with, and we can manufacture this a small batch and start getting feedback on it at least. So that's been tricky to even know where we were with that. But yeah, I think I worked with a number of different pattern makers, you know, all of which worked at different varying degrees of speed. And I don't know, the process seemed very slow to me, but I think that's because I didn't realize how complex it is to adjust patterns and to think about grading and sizing and just you know, so much goes into it that I don't know about, and I'm completely reliant on pattern makers like yourself to help me with that process.
Yeah, I loved what you said about like when are you done practicing in fashion? That's such a great question, and I think it, you know, it's something that, you know, I work with my clients too, of like, okay, at what point is it done? Is it, you know, is it ready? You know, there's kind of a usual range. Like I would say usually we can get a style, you know, fit approved in 2 to 3 samples, but sometimes if it's an initial, you know, your first collection, if we have to switch fabrics halfway through, maybe it'll take 4 or 5. But there, so like there's the usual kind of timeline of things, but then there's also, like you said, the okay, it's a minimum viable product. And I'm a big perfectionist in my work, but I realized that there is a point where if you can't get it perfect on the first time without feedback from the customer. So it's like you get it to that minimal viable product where it's like you still want to be proud of it. It's you still want it to be good, but you'll start, you know, start selling it, start getting some feedback on like an initial small collection, and then based on that feedback, you'll be able to perfect it later on for like the second, you know, second production run or, you know, 2.0 version of the product, because there's always things that you'll start to get feedback. So I think that's a really interesting thing to consider of like, okay, when is it done? Because it isn't always that straightforward, you know, here's the concert date, you know, here or here's the date we need to do things. Like there is kind of that leeway of when is it done?
And I think there's probably plenty of designers or pattern makers who make something and they think, this is perfect. I love it. And, you know, that particular style just doesn't end up being successful either, even if it is perfect. So I think, you know, I do a lot of listening to business podcasts and reading books. And I think this is like a quote from the tech world, which is something like, if you're not at least a little bit embarrassed by your first product, you launched too late. And I guess I feel that way about what I'm doing because I'm a perfectionist. You know, some of it I think looks really good and I'm really excited about it. Like some of them I think are pretty close to perfect. And then some of them I've, you know, I lay at night being like, should we have done another round of sampling? But, you know, in the end, you just have to start. If you don't start, you will never get started. So that's where I am. And I recognize I'm kind of right at the very beginning and just starting to sell things, which is exciting. But yeah, it's a great philosophical question to ponder on for probably the rest of our lives.
Yeah, and I think we sometimes, you know, as professionals don't give ourselves credit for like jumping into something new. You know, it's like you've been playing the flute professionally for a long time, and I've been a pattern maker for a long time. So it's like we have a level of competency in those areas, but then we forget that like we weren't good when we started, you know,
Right.
when
Oh,
you
it's
first
so
started.
important.
Yeah, it took
Yeah.
years of practice to get
Yeah.
there.
Yeah. It's so true.
Okay, so how long then did it take? Like, when did you first start developing the brands? And I know you just recently launched this fall, correct?
That's right. We really just launched about a month ago with pre-orders. So I only started shipping out products, actual inventory about, I don't know, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago,
Oh,
maybe.
wow, it's so exciting.
Yeah. So I had the idea. We're talking right now. It's like the very beginning of December 24. I had the idea in February of 24 of the
Oh,
same year. So
okay.
that's, I had been tossing around some kind of idea. I just couldn't ever figure out what to do. And then it kind of came to me. And then I kind of just went full steam ahead because I felt like if I stopped at all, that I would quit. I still feel that way. So yeah, in February, I just started doing research on what was out there, like what was the competition. And there's not really competition for exactly what I'm doing to begin with, which is interesting. There are concert attire providers out there. There's someone who's making men's shirts, like mostly for professionals. But it's just men's like button-down shirts is really all they're doing, and that's out of an athletic, breathable fabric. And he was kind of the leading the way. So that was part of the inspiration, was that someone had done it. And of course there are big companies that are kind of doing the whole high school choir, which is a real industry of outfitting high
Yeah.
school choir. So
But I
I
imagine those lean maybe more costume and more cheaper fabrics, not something that you want to be wearing for hours and hours as a
Yeah, I
professional.
mean they can look pretty good. Again, my stepdaughter came home with one of these choir dresses, and she was, I think she was 15 years old. And I just remember looking at it and how it was made, which was okay. The quality was okay, but it was n not the style she would ever pick out for herself. If you turned her loose with, I think that dress was probably around $70. If you turned her loose at the mall with $70, she would not buy anything that looked like that. Even if she did need to meet a dress code, she would meet it and not with that dress. And then, she told me it was absolutely stiflingly hot to perform in. And, just, I think for a lot of high school girls, they're kind of at a vulnerable age where, we're asking these girls to get up on stage in front of all of their peers at school, in front of their family, and to maybe wear something that doesn't make them feel very confident or to feel like they're going to be able to perform their best in. So that was something that kind of hit home for me about, is there a way to kind of fix that and to fix it a little bit more with just offering a lot of different concert black options so that people didn't have to feel like they had to do the identical dress option. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you, so with Black Strad, like, do you ever like sell kind of collectively to like the whole choir, or is it more like to the individual musicians?
Right now, we're really just focused on individual musicians, but we absolutely plan to move into larger group orders and high school choirs or collegiate wind ensembles and ensembles like that is absolutely the plan. Again, without inventory here in person, we're still kind of in that mostly pre-order phase. It's definitely part of the future plan for 2025. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really cool business model though, to like have the option for both of those, because it's kind of like wholesale, but it's a different type of wholesale.
Right. Yeah. I mistakenly described it to people as wholesale several months ago, and then I realized that I had really confused them because it isn't really wholesale, but it's sort of like offering it at a wholesale or almost wholesale price to a larger group who's going to make a really substantial order.
Yeah, because it's like they're not retailing it and kind of reselling it, but they're still buying in bulk, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. So how is this fashion entrepreneurship fit into your life as a professional flutist?
Well, it fits in every spare moment that one has, as so many things like this do. I've been playing professionally for over 20 years now, and when COVID happened, we were laid off from the symphony for about 6 months. But remember when it was just 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and we all thought, oh, we're just going to be home for 2 weeks or something, or a month at
It
worst,
was
right?
like years.
Yeah. So right at the very beginning, I think we had been laid off for just, it was like, I think we were laid off on a Thursday, they told us. And by the following Monday, I had enrolled in real estate school to get a real estate license because it was something really fun that I had just wanted to do because I had been doing a little bit of kind of remodeling work and stuff on the side. So I got this real estate license as quick as you can get one in the state of Utah, which was basically like in a month. And I got a real estate license. I started doing a little bit of real estate, which was great because, you know, as someone who was laid off at the time, I was sort of in a panic about. And there was also like, is the world ending? Maybe the entire world is just, well, maybe the symphony will never come back, you know, in this very early phase. So I got a real estate license and I've had a lot of fun working doing that. And I still have a real estate license, but I'm desperately trying to quit and do fashion instead. But yeah, I kind of got that. I really liked learning and doing something new. So then when I realized that, even when we were back to work that next September, we returned to work, not laid off anymore. We returned with a very reduced schedule. And I kind of saw this opportunity that I was going to be working. My paycheck was sort of somewhat back to normal. And I saw I was going to have a lot of spare time that year. And I decided to get an MBA. So I did, you know, I got an MBA. You know, at age 40, I guess. Yeah, I think I graduated when I was 40, and it's just a couple of years ago. So I did that whole thing, and I guess I've kind of always had an entrepreneurial mindset of being interested in starting my own business or, you know, having something, you know, not trying to play the flute all the way to retirement age of 67, which is very difficult to do. I can't imagine performing at this level and at this, you know, rate of concerts all the way through my 60s. But so in my mind, I kind of wanted to start a business so that I could transition at some point and not have to perform all the way through until retirement. So yeah, I got the MBA and had just I graduated with it, and then I kind of spent a year kind of aimless thinking, well, I never got my idea of what to do. And I guess it seemed it's obvious looking back on it now that I had always been kind of obsessed with clothes and interested in fashion and kind of interested in being not a rule breaker, but and I want to be someone who like makes change to make things more progressive and more modern. I would love to see professional orchestras become a lot more modern in their thinking and the way they perform and what music they perform. So I can kind of see looking back at it now that this is just kind of the perfect thing for me to do because I do have this experience, obviously playing in orchestras, being a professional musician for 2 decades now. And then I have thought a lot about black clothes, obviously, for 20 years. And I've been in that mindset of how can we fix this? How can we make this better for everyone? And how can this be a little more progressive? So that was kind of all how it came about. And then once the idea kind of coalesced in my mind, I just went for it. I just started contacting pattern makers and I was sketching and I went to, you know, LA to look at fabric and I just started. And it's mostly been an enormous amount of research and learnings, which is great. I'm excited to learn something new.
It's such a cool backstory. Thanks for sharing. I'm curious, like in your re like where did you go to research and like find these places in LA or find the pattern makers you've worked with? And like how did you even know what to do first?
Well, Google is your best friend. I mean, if you're starting business, you can learn almost anything on Google and YouTube. So I think, you know, it was like, oh, you should go to the Magic Convention in Las Vegas, which I was not going to be able to go to the one in February because I had a concert. But I could go to LA to, I guess it's the big one of the fabric shows, or there's like three big fabric things that happened in sort of end of February.
July, I think.
Yeah. Well, I went to one that was in right then at the end of February.
Okay.
California Market. I don't know. There's like, I can't remember the names of them. So I went there and spent 2 days looking at fabric, which was informative, partly just to understand the prices of fabric and the minimum orders. And then, there's actually a local, I talked to a local designer here in Salt Lake City, and she told me that she had some things were being made in LA, but she also said some things were made being made here in Utah. And there's a very small sewing facility an hour south of Salt Lake City where I live, and I just called the guy up, and they're not very busy. They weren't at that time. And he was like, yeah, come on down and talk to me. So I actually went to a sewing factory, a very small one early on. And he was so helpful telling me all about the process and the minimum orders and, that basically no one was going to make less than 100 of each garment, and that it was going to require all this sampling, and that you had to figure out the fabric. And he was like, the first thing is you have to figure out the fabric, And he referred me to a local pattern maker. And then when I was in LA at those kind of fabric conventions, I met a couple of other pattern makers who, at one point, I had four different pattern makers because I was just trying
Oh,
to
wow.
turn people out. Because I kind of gave everyone different projects. And then it all kind of ended up, I just ended up using one person and just transferred it all to one place in LA. And that's who's doing all the production right now. But oh, it was a learning process, and I made many mistakes. I bought all kinds of wrong fabric that I never should have bought. But again, you're just trying to get started, and you don't know what to do, and you're just gonna learn by making mistakes, and you just learn by doing. So I just kept going with it, and it's working so far. Fingers
Yeah,
crossed.
you made it to the pre-sale, so that means like you got the pieces to the point where you're ready to launch them. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
So yeah, looking back, like what is one of the like if you had known, if you could tell yourself when you started one thing now that you've learned at this point, what would that be?
Gosh, I guess probably something along the lines of pattern makers do know what they're talking about, and they know a lot more than I do. And probably I should have just taken their advice sometimes, right from the start, that my idea wasn't going to work. But as a stubborn person, I really do like to see that my idea didn't work before moving on, because not all of them went wrong. So sometimes they were like, oh, you know what? That fabric actually did a lot better than I thought. Like, none of them wanted to work with lyocell, Tencel or lyocell. And I feel like I really wanted to work with it because it was, it's made from rapidly renewable resources like eucalyptus trees. It's biodegradable, and just more than all of those things, it's really soft. It's really silky. It feels a
And
lot
it's
like silk.
cool to
It's
the
cool to
skin.
the touch, and it's breathable. So even at kind of a heavy weight, like 200 GSM, it feels like a second skin. And it was so fun when the clothing finally came, we finally got it in the right fabric, that I was sitting on stage one night, and we actually had a prototype made of this kind of gender neutral jacket I'm trying to create. And I wore the jacket with it was made out of lyocell, and I wore it with a matching skirt. And it felt kind of heavy and substantial, but I'm telling you, it felt like a second skin on stage when I was wearing it. And I just thought, people are going to love this. Like, once they get it on and they get it on stage, I think they're going to feel really comfortable in it. But a lot of pattern makers were worried about the Tencel, or the lyocell, because I don't know, one of them didn't like it because it's slippery. And then another was like, oh, this is just like wrinkly. And we finally found a lyocell that had 5% spandex in it, which helps to prevent the wrinkling. Made it maybe a little more grippy for the people doing the actual sewing. And it made it comfortable for the musicians who are wearing it. So I'm excited about the fabric that we settled on. I hope I can continue to source it. which is always a struggle. Yeah, that would be like, I guess one of the main things is just trust the pattern maker. They really do know what they're doing.
Yeah, there, I mean, it comes from trial and error oftentimes of like, I've worked with this, something similar before, and this is how it went. But like you said, it's possible, it's entirely possible, and I think it's fun to you know what the rules are, but then you can break the rules once you know what they are. So it's like normally maybe you wouldn't use that fabric for that type of garment or application. But if you understand how it behaves and you understand like the usual rule, then you can be like, but there's some other things we could do, or we can make it work in these ways in order to create something like really unique and really functional. So it sometimes it is worth giving it a try, or like rethinking how can we change the normal way we would do this in order to make it work in this new way.
I mean, that's the whole thing about literally creating something that no one's created before is people are going to think you're a little bit crazy. And that's fine because no one's done it and they may continue to think I'm crazy until it really works. But I'm convinced that it's going to work and that this fabric is something people are really going to like. And yeah, I think you just have to have a lot of gumption to go with something if you really believe in it. But I think also that flexibility to when if you can clearly see it's not working, to change immediately. Do not continue down that path to
Yeah,
change. But
it can get
yeah.
expensive if you're like, it's
Oh,
gonna
of
work at all
course.
costs. Because sometimes it's like you can get a sample to work, but then it's like, well, what is it gonna look like in production once you make 100 of these, or 10 of these? Even is it still gonna work consistently well, or was like making the one a fluke or way too expensive to be worth it?
Right. All good questions.
So, I know you mentioned kind of the sustainability or of the fabric, the eucalyptus trees, and I know that's something that's important to the brand, but you prefer the word responsibility over sustainability. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think, there's a lot of greenwashing that's happening, and there's a lot of, we just have problems with terminology and agreeing upon what something means. We're never going to be 100% completely sustainable. I mean, there is going to be some waste. There's going to be some fabric waste. The research I did on packaging alone, it was so many hours of just debating about like the compostable packaging, like I'm using a compostable mailer, but you can't really use a compostable poly bag to put the clothing in unless you're very certain it's going to sell within 3 months or something, because that will start to degrade potentially, in a matter of months or less than a year. So then you have to go to like using paper, like I did glassine bags, paper bags, which, these can be easily recycled curbside, or then I also have the recycled kind of traditional poly plastic bag, which is getting made from recycled plastic, but I'm still confused about it. It's like it comes from, it's going to end up in a landfill still, but at least it was used making recycled plastic, or there's vice versa. It's just, and then once you put like a mailing label on it, now it's, you've ruined it. It can't be recycled. You have to tear the mailing label off or the stickers or something. So trying to even just get the packaging alone, there's really, I think we have to acknowledge that, we should all be trying to be more responsible in our manufacturing practices. We should be more ethical about what we're doing, and striving to continually improve. But again, to reach perfection on responsibility or eco-conscious manufacturing, that's going to be a different definition for a lot of different people, and it may be, impossible according to a lot of people's definitions. So I think continually striving for improvement, to be responsible about production is what we're trying to commit to.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's a, I agree with you that like sustainability, the term can mean a lot of different things, and it almost demands perfectionism, which is not possible for any brand. And so, yeah, responsibility. I like that term that you use for that, just because it leads sometimes to more action, where like you're thinking about each of the details through that lens, and taking responsibility for the decisions you're making for your production, and that will have an impact, a positive impact on the sustainability, even if it's not perfect.
Yep, just incremental improvements is better than none.
100%. So, other than that, are there any other values that are integral to Black Strad when it comes to either the clothing or how you run your business?
Well, just inclusivity in general is really important. I want to be sizing inclusive. As you know, it's extremely expensive to do very large size runs. Like, I would love to have everything going from 0 to 22, but not every manufacturer is willing to do that unless you make a very substantial minimum order. So that's kind of where I'm wholesaling those items that are going more into plus sizing. But I am going to make a dress this in 2025 that is going to go through size 18, which is exciting. So definitely
Nice.
sizing inclusivity is always top of mind. I think also that kind of gender inclusivity of trying to find an option or at least a few options for people that are not so binary, that would fit a dress code. And I think we're also looking at doing a little bit of maternity clothing too, which has been brought to my attention. I didn't even think of that. And people are, when you start a company like this, people are like, well, when are you doing petites? And when are you doing tall? And do you do plus sizes? And then it was like, are you doing maternity? And I was like, oh my goodness. Yes, we want to do maternity. So we are starting to offer a small range of maternity items, which will be going up on the website soon. So I think just general inclusivity. I think people don't realize how hard it is to find concert clothing that kind of checks all the boxes. And I think they've kind of accepted that it's hard and that that's just the way it is. And I would love to change that.
Yeah, and it sounds like the response since launching, or maybe this is a question for you too, like how has the response been since launching? Like if people are, I imagine if people are asking like when are you doing this? When are you doing that? That they're interested in this brand and what you're doing.
They
So
are. Yeah. I mean, I think there's been so much positive reception. Almost everyone is like, wow, I'm so glad someone is finally doing that. Or, that's such a great idea and such a thing that's needed. So people do see it as a need. I mean, I'm someone who loves to shop, so I can find stuff, but I do spend hours shopping for Concert Black, and not everyone wants to do that. Which is why, ultimately my goal is to create a site where we're going to kind of carry a lot of different things that would meet those requirements for the people who don't want to sift through website after website or rack after rack at Nordstrom Rack or something looking for concert attire. Yeah, that's just been one of my major goals.
Yeah, so when it comes to, you have your line of clothes at Black Strad, but then you're also retailing other brands. So how did those partnerships come about? And is it just the hours you've spent shopping that you found these places that do carry pieces that fit the Concert Black dress code?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much me just shopping and reaching out to people and just buying a small order of maybe even just one particular style or two or three particular styles and stocking those and just seeing what the reception is to that, because that's a much less expensive thing to kind of test as well, rather than developing your own collection and doing 100 minimum or over 100 minimum. So yeah, just kind of individually looking and reaching out to different designers, even people on, Etsy, or, I would love to hear from you actually as to where can I find kind of an independent designer who's doing small batch that is wholesaling. It's very also very niche because generally they aren't wholesaling something that's kind of small batch production like that. So
Yeah, I'll have to think like off the top of my head, like who would, I'm sure there are some. I will email you if I think of one that's like, oh, they have a piece that would meet all these
yeah, I
criteria.
mean, Etsy was like kind of the best bet, and then reaching out to them to say, can I buy, a little size set from you? And that was one way. But again, that was very time consuming to do. I mean, I have fun doing it, so I like shopping for stuff like that and Googling lots of things. But yeah, it's kind of a lot of slow, tedious work goes into it, like anything.
I bet. Yeah, and how have you tested each of the products, either your own or the ones that you're retailing? Like, do you wear them all on stage and see how they work?
Well, certainly with my designs, absolutely. I would wear all of the samples on stage. I mean, sometimes there was fit issues or some kind of issue where I couldn't wear it. But absolutely, I was wearing them and seeing what people thought and having, taking them to work and taking them to the dressing room and having my colleagues try them on. And, especially sometimes the samples came in a size that didn't quite fit me. They were a little too big or too small, and I've just bring them in and be like, "Well, you guys want to try this stuff on and tell me what size you feel like that is," and get feedback from them about, did they feel like they could play their cello in it? Did they feel like they could play a violin in it? Just to get those perspectives from musicians that play a different instrument than I do.
I bet that was super fun and fun either, also for the other musicians to be able to, share their feedback and in input into the product.
Absolutely.
Well, this is so fun. I've really enjoyed our conversation, Mercedes. I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
Oh gosh, one value. Well, I think just modernity, the idea of it being modern, of something being a fresh perspective, a new perspective. That seems like too simple of an answer, but
No.
modern can be so all-encompassing, whether we're talking about inclusivity or trying different fabrics or a new modern design or just a modern way of thinking about concert attire, that we're always kind of forward moving, looking to the future. Yeah, modernity.
Yeah, that's such a cool answer. No one's answered that yet, and I really like your take on that. This has been so fun. Where can people find out more about Blackstrad and what you're doing online?
Sure, we're just on the internet at blackstrad.com, and love for you to check out the collection and send me a note and let me know what you think. And if you find something you like, I hope you buy it.
Cool. And so are pre-orders still open now, or when will you have like a stock available starting to ship?
Sure. About half of it's in stock right now, and there's I think just six, no, sorry, four items that are still in pre-order, but they should all be here before Christmas to ship out before Christmas. So
Okay,
really,
great. So
really,
by the time this airs, they should all be
I
in
think so,
here.
yeah.
Cool. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a pleasure.
Gosh, thank you so much. It was a joy for me to do it.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.